The following podcast contains adult subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello and welcome back to our coverage of Denver Pop Culture Con. I'm Albie with TOTLB, and I'm here with Clark Wolf.
Hello.
It's very nice to meet you.
It's so nice to meet you, too.
You're a podcaster.
Yes.
As am I.
Great.
What do you love about podcasting?
I really, really, you know, I have my own podcast now, but I started doing a show called The Bloodcast with Ryan Turek, who used to manage Shock Till You Drop and now runs creative over at Blumhouse. So he's really moving up in the world. But that was the first exposure I had to having in-depth, fun conversations in an audio medium, which is so nice sometimes because you don't have to worry about, did we get the shot? You know, is hair and makeup ready? And I also found that when people are guests on podcasts, they tend to loosen up a little bit because if you put a camera on somebody, they kind of get nervous or they get very self-conscious. But if you're just having a conversation, then they tend to loosen up a little bit. So now that I have my own podcast, that's one of the things that I love the most is getting the opportunity to just, you know, whether it's somebody I know very well or somebody I'm just meeting, to just sit down and dive into a talk and not have that pressure of the on-camera pressure or anything like that.
Audio is more intimate, I think.
It really, really is. And there's something about it that feels very, feels like forever. You're listening to somebody tell a story. You know what I mean? So it doesn't necessarily feel, I think that's why people are gravitating towards podcasts now is because feels like listening to radio plays or it feels like listening to just old-fashioned storytelling or connecting. You know, we do so much on the internet where we're connected, but maybe not really. And so when you're listening to people talk, you feel their connection and then you feel connected, you know?
I've been very lucky to get some amazing interviews with celebrities and stuff. And have you had interviews that you like totally nerded out about like on the inside, but were cool when you're recording it?
You know, it's funny because I try to approach everything as a fan or and you know, I guess being a fan can kind of manifest in different ways. But I think ultimately, if you're a fan of something, you appreciate what that person does or a fan of someone. And so so most of the time I try to have my cake and eat it, too, and work my oh my gosh, this is really happening into the conversation.
Okay.
It's an off and but I think at the end of the day, if you approach it from a position of admiration and respect as opposed to you know, maybe something else, then you can oftentimes, 9 out of 10 times, that person that you're talking to will respond positively. And then that one other time that they don't, they're just a jerk, so whatever.
You're a correspondent for Nerdist?
Yes. So I have been working on and off for Nerdist for several years. I haven't worked with them lately, but they actually just reached out about starting to do some more horror stuff together. So if I got my fingers crossed that this summer we'll get to do a bunch of fun horror things.
Is that a fun group to work with?
Oh my gosh, yes. I mean, they are the team over there is fantastic. And Rachel Hein, who has been she and I both started as freelancers at the same time, and then she quickly moved up the ranks and became the editor-in-chief, and now she's overseeing not just Nerdist, but Geek and Sundry, and she's amazing. And Dan Casey, you know, who is one of the faces of that brand, they both are lovely and passionate and awesome and have been there since I started working with that brand, and they're just two of the best people that you'll ever meet.
You are not just a podcaster, you're an actress as well.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about Satanic Panic?
Yes, I would love to. So I just came from the Overlook Film Festival, actually, on Friday in New Orleans, and then got up very early the next morning to come to Denver and for the world premiere, which was so much fun. And the movie is produced by Fangoria. And so anytime you get the opportunity to, as a horror fan, anytime you get the opportunity to do anything close to Fangoria, you go, oh, this is cool. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, I have one scene scene in the movie. It's real fast. But I was, it was my first feature, and I have been working with the director, Chelsea Stardust. She's been a dear friend for years, and she and I have worked together. I produced a musical that she directed, and I was also in, and she's directed me in many, many short films, and she directed a live read of Rosemary's Baby that I produced and starred in. And so she and I have been working together for a long time, and so it has been so fantastic to see her rise. She has had two features premiere in a month, and it's just like, because she's been working her butt off for so long. So she did amazing things with this movie, and it's super funny, and it's fun and gross, and it's gonna make the festival rounds over the summer, and then should be out in the early fall.
Okay. And you were in another movie.
Yes, it's called Deathcember, and it is a horror anthology. And I'm in the segment called A Christmas Miracle with Barbara Crampton. So Barbara Crampton, for those who may not know, is a horror icon, and she starred in Reanimator and From Beyond and so many, and You're Next, among many, many other things. And so it's she and I, and the director Vivian Vaughn wrote and directed the segment called Christmas Miracle, and I'm really proud of it. It's a great segment, and it's gorgeous to look at, and it's whereas my role in Satanic Panic was straight comedy, my role in Deathcember is straight drama. So it's been really cool for me. You know, I grew up on stage, so I didn't just start acting. I've been acting since I was very, very little, but more people know me as a host. And so just in the last 12 months, being able to do these two roles, which are so different, has been a very cool opportunity.
You started acting very young.
Yes.
Did the bug bite you immediately? Like, did you love the stage? And can you tell me a little bit about your early career as a child acting?
Absolutely. I mean, so it's funny because I cannot remember a time where The Wizard of Oz was not like in my purview. You too? Okay. Yes. So that movie really was the thing. And it was the thing I think that made me realize I loved movies, and I wanted to be a performer, and I wanted to sing and dance and make people laugh and take them on these journeys. And so I went to my parents very, very, very young and said, like, I want to be an actor. And my parents said, you're not being an actor. they were like, this never ends well, and we're not doing that. But I did do a lot of theater. So I did a lot of theater, local theater, neighborhood theater, and that never went away. I've been doing stage since I was probably 5 years old, and singing in talent shows and things like that. And when I moved to LA, I absolutely pursued acting. If I could have done it primarily, I would have, but I just wasn't quite getting those feet in the door. And so at the time I moved to Los Angeles, geek culture was exploding, and the rise of the internet and the internet chat show and internet videos and YouTube and all of these things. And so that sort of, I decided, you know, this is what I'm passionate about anyway. And if I can get my foot in a door in one way, then I think I could probably make a pivot back into acting and back into film. And so that was the idea. And now it's taken a long time, but I'm sort of, now it's like pivoting back. And so I'm happy about that.
Lifelong overnight success kind of thing.
And totally. Yes. I hope there is more to come from that.
Where did your affinity for horror come from?
I've always been interested in scary movies, and I love when I was younger, I kind of tiptoed up to it, but then I would get too scared. But I had this great babysitter who I'm still friends with to this day, and she showed me Tim Burton movies. She showed me Pee Wee. She showed me fantasy, you know, Neverending Story and Labyrinth and all of those great 80s, you know, 80s fantasy movies that were dark, that were legend.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff that's really scary, but, you know, wasn't too much for a little kid. And so that sort of was enough until I got into high school and I wasn't so scared and I was able to process a little better. And that's when I started actually studying film academically, like in school. And that's when I really started exploring horror more. But it's been a lifelong thing. I often, going back to Wizard of Oz, I often say that that's a movie that sort of all of me and my tastes, you can really see in The Wizard of Oz. It's big. It's Hollywood. It's a female-driven story. It's funny. It's fantastical. There's music. It's a blockbuster, but it's scary.
Absolutely.
And there's some really
kind flying of, monkeys, I mean, trees come on. That are
the
angry
trees,
at you. Yeah,
a witch, like. Get right out of town. So, yeah, so I've always had that interest. But it wasn't until really I got into high school and I stopped becoming, you know, if I saw a movie that was truly scary, I wouldn't be scarred for life and wouldn't be able to sleep. You know, when I got into high school, I was able to make that separation.
What kind of projects do you hope to do in the future?
That's a great question. Well, it's funny. This year I wrote my first screenplay, it is a Christmas rom-com.
I love it already.
Thank you.
That's my thing. I love it.
Thank you. And so, but it's funny because when I tell people that, they go, really? It's not a horror movie? It's not. And I'm like, nah, this is just what I had in me and what I wanted to kind of put onto the page. And so, you know, for future, what would I love to do? I would love to, honestly, I just want to work. I know that's such a, I know that's such an easy answer, but whether I would love to sell the script and see it made, that would be amazing. I would love to produce more in a perfect world. But I would also love to get back in front of the camera and to do. It's funny, the more I think about it, the more I just want to play like a teacher on a sitcom, you know, or like a quirky, weird mom, like a Malcolm in the Middle mom or something like that. But I love television. I love long form storytelling. And the more I think about it, this is like kind of a weird thing to say, but right now, heavy drama and like proving that I'm an actor isn't really interesting to me. I kind of just want to make entertainment. I kind of just want to entertain people and
make people happy.
And make people happy. Yeah. And, you know, that's cool to me. So, you know, in a perfect world, I would love to like book a show, a TV show. Let's put it out into the universe. A TV show that shoots on the Warner Brothers lot in Burbank, close to where I live. I can just drive in every day and do the thing and then leave. And have a job for a long time.
Sounds perfect. 7 seasons, maybe 10.
Done. Deal.
And sign then a movie at the end.
And a movie at the end. Sign me right up.
So writing a screenplay, is that difficult?
It was, you know, so I didn't know what I was really doing. I had taken screenwriting classes in college because I was a film major, but I never really, screenwriting always felt very daunting to me. And I have had ideas and pitches and things like that that I wanted to flesh out, but they all are very mythology based and just intense and so many moving parts. So it was intimidating. So I never did it. But this story, you know, I honestly just kind of felt like, well, I came up with the idea to write a Christmas rom-com because I thought, well, these are selling and maybe I could sell one. But then as I started the process, it became so personal and it was so fun to do. But when you're writing within conventions, to me at least, you know, you go, okay, I know what a holiday movie is. I know what a rom-com is. I can do that. Okay, you hit the beats. Here we go. So I followed, I read screenwriting books, obviously, and did the pre-work and did the notes and wrote out all the facts about the characters. But at the end of the day, after outlining and sitting down to write it, I kind of felt like it was all there. I was like, yeah, this outline is a movie and I think it's here. And then sitting down to actually write the script, it just kind of came out. That's lucky because I've started thinking about those more in-depth things that I want to do. Like maybe I have a TV series that's a political thriller with witches that I want to create and a noir, a female led detective story.
That sounds good. That sounds good.
Yeah. So like, but those are a little scarier to write, right? Because those don't feel as, formulaic.
Right.
But when I say formulaic, I don't mean that in a bad way. I actually mean it in a great way because I like having rules that then I can break or subvert, you know?
It's great for the content, but if it's too different than the norm, it might not get picked up.
Exactly.
Or right.
Yeah.
So
but it was fun. It was fun to write that script. I don't know if the other ones will be as fun, but I hope they will. I think they will.
Did you get a certain sense of satisfaction when you knew you were done and you had it?
Yes. Yes, I did. And I actually was really, really proud at following the steps. And I guess it's going to be different. It's different for every writer and it's going to be probably different for every script. But following the steps of writing in the notebook and by hand, doing the beats and answering questions about the characters and the motivations and all that stuff, but then putting it into the outline. And when I had the outline, I was like, yeah, this is my movie. And then sitting down and actually having the script, and it came out at 92 pages. And I was like,
a little over an hour and a half.
I mean, it's perfect. Like that's what you want. You know, you want a 90 page, especially if you're doing something like this. So I kind of was like, wow, I did that. Yay. So yes, it felt really good.
When you're writing something and it's like a romantic comedy, do you picture yourself as one of the leads?
Yes. I will say that I wrote this with the hope to play the lead woman in it. But yes. So yes is the answer. But I also definitely wrote it with other people in mind, you know, like some characters more than others. Like I have one character that is absolutely supposed to be Stephen Colbert. I have one character that is absolutely supposed to be Ron Perlman. But some of the other characters, one character I wrote was supposed to be, an actress named Lindy Greenwood, who I worked with, doing some stuff for Sleepy Hollow, and she's insanely talented, and she doesn't know I wrote this part for her, but like, in my head, this is it, Lindy. So, some of those, yes, and then other ones, less so. You know, so you sort of go, yeah, it's kind of like this person or that person, but some characters were specifically supposed to be me or other people, and then some characters, not so much.
What's the process like now that you have the script to getting it made? What is that like, selling it? And
yeah, well, I will say this, you know, as we were talking about a little earlier, you know, when you're a person who's not necessarily in a box. So I am an actress, but I'm an entertainment host, and I produce theater sometimes, and I do a podcast and all those different kinds of things. It's sort of hard to get people who are entertainment professionals, meaning like agents and managers, to understand that you're trying to break out of your lane. And so it has been challenging. It has been really challenging not feeling like I have the tools to get it out there in the way that I know the business operates, especially around holiday movies, because this is a movie that's meant for streaming. This actually wasn't, I never wrote it thinking about theatrical. So that said, it's been a challenge, but you become your own best friend, and the people who, and your colleagues and the people you work with, like, you hope they, if they take a look and they like it, then they'll pass it to somebody. And so that's been the process so far. You know, and I don't advise anybody to do this, but because I do have representation and this is a person at a production, production company, somebody on a producer on Twitter who works for a pretty big production company said, "Hey, I'm looking for holiday movies and, you know, bonuses or rom-coms and bonus if they're holiday movies." And I was like, hi. But that said, you don't want to just send something willy-nilly out because it's unsolicited. You know, you want to make sure that you go through the proper channels legally, because people can't look at it legally if they're not asking to see it. So be sure to loop in, you know, your lawyers or your agents or your managers or whomever, which I did. But that just happened last week. Like,
oh, wow.
That's one weird way of sort of doing it. And then by talking to friends and saying, "I have a holiday rom-com," and then they're talking to somebody and they get back to you and say, "Oh, I was just talking to somebody who's looking for what you have. Do you want to send it over?" So it hasn't sold yet, but it's not, I believe in the material and I think it will go somewhere eventually. But if nothing else, I've written a screenplay and I have a spec. So for anybody listening to this who is looking to break in, I mean, honestly, if you have an idea that you're passionate about and you do the homework and you're like, you know, I think I could write this, just write it. Because having a spec when somebody says, "Oh, what can I read?" and you can go, "Well, I have an outline," that's not the same right as being like, "No, here, I wrote a script. Here you go."
That's awesome. Your career has been so diverse. Is there anything in the entertainment business or any other business that you want to do that you haven't checked off your list yet?
I want to play a superhero villain, or like, you know, I auditioned for, I have no problem saying this because I love the girl. I never met her, but I loved her performance. I auditioned for the Kim Possible TV movie to play Shigo.
Wow.
And that was the most fun because it's for kids. And so you get to be big and animated, but also you're playing a villain. And her outfit was so cool. Taylor Ortega ended up playing the role and she was so good. But doing that, again, it's like, this isn't heavy drama. I don't need to tell anybody I'm the best actor in the whole world. I just want to entertain people and have fun. So that could be really fun. Or a reboot of Willow. If they reboot Willow, Ron Howard, if you're listening.
Are they talking about that? I heard
they're
something.
They're always talking about it. I even asked Ron Howard about that one time.
Like a TV series or something.
A TV show,
yeah,
exactly.
Sure.
But if you think about it, Alora Dannon would be about my age. So if they wanted to like pick up where the story left off, I had red hair for a while, so I could totally do it. But no, I mean, I love like, I've never been killed in a horror movie either. Which I think would be
spoilers
really
for the horror movies you're in.
Oh, spoiler alert. Yeah, exactly. My one scene does not end in death.
Okay, now I know. I was worried for
you,
actually.
Yeah, exactly. Nope, don't worry. I make it.
People that would like to follow you and enjoy your work, where can they follow you?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Clark Wolf, Clark with an E, Wolf with an E. And you can find my podcast wherever you find podcasts. It's called Sending the Wolf, S-E-N-D-I-N-G.
Where did you get the title?
Well, it's from Pulp Fiction.
That's what we thought.
Yes. And my logo is me with a tuxedo holding a mug that has a little wolf on it. And Brian E. Ward, Brian with a Y, he designed that logo. And I was like, this is amazing. So, yes, it is a nod to Pulp Fiction. Yes.
Clark Wolf, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Thinking Outside the Long Walks podcast. Join us on Facebook and Twitter to get behind-the-scenes information for exclusive content and to be notified when new episodes are available. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual and do not necessarily represent or reflect those of the Thinking Outside the Long Walks podcast, Barron Space Productions, its partners, or affiliates. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is made available by its creators, Juan, John, and Gabe. The podcast is edited and produced by Juan, and Albie is the co-executive producer. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is a Barron Space production.